You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you are listening to Answers for the Family. As a licensed private investigator and certified instructor in nonviolent crisis intervention for over 30 years, I've been working with families in crisis and dealing with transporting them to various programs, as well as working with some of the top therapists in helping these families deal with the issues that they're having to deal with. And getting them to the programs that they need to get to. I've been very, very fortunate to meet and work with some of these top professionals, and I will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, this week, I am very, very excited to bring you a psychotherapist and life coach who specializes in individual couples, family, and group psychotherapy. She has over 13 years' experience as a clinician and is a graduate of USC, specializing in addictions, eating disorders, parenting, and life coaching. As well as just bringing a wealth of experience working with families in need. I also want to tell everybody thank you. I realize that this is Labor Day, and I really appreciate all of you who are joining us on this very special day. And without further ado, I would like to bring you our guest, Sherry Gaba. Sherry, do we have you on the line?
Okay.
All right. I'm not sure if you were listening, but I have introduced you and told our audience a little bit about you. What we'd like to talk about today is the topic of teenage love addiction. I know that this is an area that you have done a lot of work in. And let me tell you a little bit about how my company or how we run into this. In transporting the kids to the programs, we're picking them up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and we're taking them possibly to a drug treatment center or a specialized program. When we're seeing this is the child that absolutely refuses to go, and not because they don't want to miss school, not because they don't want to miss their friends or anything else. It is because they are completely and totally obsessed with that person they think they're in love with.
Very interesting.
So that's how we're dealing with it. Now, if you could just tell our audience a little bit about what are some of the things that are going on in that child that has got them to that point?
Well, you know, you use the word obsessed. Other words that come to mind are possessed.
Yeah.
being an adolescent, that's the time, you know, when there's hormonal spikes and all kinds of stuff happening in their body, chemical changes. It's the time, you know, when there's those deep infatuations and deep love. And then you got the mood swings. And then, you know, it's just a very, very vulnerable time. And so obviously, you know, having to leave that love object is what we're talking about. They don't want to leave that love object. They really believe they're going to really just die, just like losing the drug. You know, it's really the same kind of high that they feel they're going to miss out on, or they feel that it's the same feeling. It's the same feeling. The love object is the same high that they get with their drugs and their alcohol.
How did they get to this point?
There are a lot of different reasons that they get to this point. Or, like I said earlier, was that it's just that time when there are hormonal changes, but also, you know, where did they come from? What kind of family of origin did they come from? You know, did they go through all the developmental stages, you know, adequately? Were their needs met? Did mom and dad neglect them, or did they have a mom that, or a father, or were they adultified or parentified, mm-hmm. where they were, you know, made to feel like the adult of the family? That's when they sort of their needs weren't met, and so now the needs have to be met by a significant other, and that's why they become so possessed and obsessed with, you know, the person that they're involved with.
Okay. Well, are you saying then that you're finding it more in situations where possibly you have a single parent situation, and a huge amount of responsibility is being placed on that child?
you know, I have to say that that can really happen a lot in a single parent family. I was a single parent, and you know, yes, it is very possible that these families were single parent families where mom, you know, really utilized the child as her partner in a way, you know, surrogate partner. And that's a really dangerous thing to do, because then the child doesn't get to be a child. And
exactly.
You know, becomes very, you know, needy and clingy, and you know, basically this new relationship becomes sort of like the so-called mom, if you know what I mean.
Oh yes, absolutely. Now I noticed that you know, we're running into this more and more from the standpoint of the internet. I mean, how much is this growing just because of cyberspace?
Well, I think, you know, 3 out of 4 kids use socialization right on the internet, and I think as a parent, you got to really be mindful of how much time they are on the internet. I would be around when they're using the internet. I'd know who they're talking to. I'd know who their MySpace associates are. I think you're absolutely right. I think it also increases the cyber sex problems, you know, as you know.
Oh yes. Well, I know that you know, in dealing with some of the parents, they have felt that, you know, their child that is very, very social, like, oh, you know, my child is so social, they have so many friends, and then their child all of a sudden, I mean, has no friends. They're not paying attention to them, to any of the friends, because they have that one special friend, that one person that they feel they're in love with.
You know, it's sort of like this real fused relationship. It's really like they're trying to fill an empty hole, you know, something that hasn't been filled in other ways. And, you know, of course, this can be really dangerous when that relationship ends. I mean, as you know, you see it in action when you're trying to get them into treatment. You can see the kind of behavior. Imagine that, you know, if you weren't there trying to get them in treatment, the kind of stuff that can go on when that relationship ends. It can be very dangerous.
Well, yeah, and then as a therapist, I mean, if you're working with the family, you know, if that child has, you know, has any suicidal tendencies or such, you know, obviously you've got a much bigger issue then. How often?
Do you recall the case recently where a girl hung herself? There was
right.
Terrible. Yeah, I mean, it was sort of a hoax where a neighbor pretended to be a, you know, so-called love object, and then the love object disappeared, and this little girl, teenage girl, you know, killed herself. That's how dangerous it can get.
And I recall, and which then goes right back to the internet. You know,
right, exactly.
You know, the situations to where now you have the child that maybe wasn't the most social child. You know, the parents,
right.
The parents were worried about their child that was super social. Well, now you have the one that's not very social, that they're sort of introverted, and the parents are extremely surprised when all of a sudden they're in love with someone that they've maybe even never met.
Right, right. Isn't that scary? Very scary.
Yeah.
And now they feel needed. Now they feel like somebody wants them. They feel like they belong. You know how it is during that time when peer pressure plays havoc on a child, and now suddenly they feel like they're part of something, and you know, fantasy sort of replaces reality. And also, cyber love is highly charged, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's very like quick, and there's these highs and these lows and these abrupt endings, you know, kind of sets a child up for the use and crash cycle, just like drug addiction does.
Oh, I know. And from the standpoint of popularity, are you now seeing now that, you know, the child that maybe wasn't very popular or was introverted, now because of cyberspace, it is a new level of popularity for them?
I guess if you want to call it cyber popularity. I mean, I don't think that they're having the social relationships outside of there. I think it becomes more of an escape for them, the internet.
Yeah.
I think it becomes a numbing out. I don't think it's really a case of them being popular. I think it's just a place for them to hide from who they are and hide from, you know, really being the best they can with other relationships outside of the internet.
Well,
the internet I think it can be really dangerous.
Well, I agree, and I bring it up because we, in moving some of these children to programs, we're now running into more of them that are saying, you know, I've got 2,000 friends, you know, and,
wow.
You know, and we try to explain to them, no, you have 2,000 people that are at a computer terminal, that most of which you haven't met. These aren't friends. So I think the definition of a friend is now askew, you know, in what they really believe a true friend is. You know, that friend, the person that you can call on when you need them, or you can cry on their shoulder,
yeah,
not
right,
somebody that
right.
you can shoot a quick email to.
I'd be curious when you. I'm curious, Alan, when you put them into treatment, are they just begging for their computer? I would imagine that that's just a huge issue.
Some of them are. Some of them, and you know, obviously, we're talking about the love addiction to another person. Yes, we have some that the most important thing to them is their computer. You know, it's, you know, can I bring my laptop? No, I'm sorry, I don't believe the program allows you to do that. I'm not going because I can't go without my laptop. I have to have
right.
it. You know,
isn't
so
that something? Wow.
Yeah. Mm. I think we're opening up new doors of new types of addiction.
Right. Well, they're using love like a drug. They believe in their head that this relationship is the end all. You know, and like I said, they won't survive without it. They believe they won't survive without it. And then what happens when that relationship ends? Then they just go seeking the next relationship, the next high. You know, just like the drug addict is looking for the next high, and they're looking for that original high that never going to happen. It's never going to satisfy them. There'll be a thirst there that will never be satisfied.
Well, going along with that, what can we do to protect our kids in hopes that they don't get to that point? Or if they are at that point, what can we do to try to pull them out?
I think it's just like any other addiction. You just really want to be mindful of your kids and how they're acting. You know, are they isolating more? Are you seeing some eating disordered habits, traits? Are you seeing more withdrawn behavior? You know, are they angrier? Kind of the same signs and symptoms of whether or not there might be a drug addiction going on. You know, are there a lot of mood swings, depression, anxiety? Are they self-destructing? Are they self-mutilating? You know, all stuff, acting out stuff. That's the kind of stuff you want to be aware of and be really mindful of. I mean, there's many, many things you can do as parents. I mean, you want to role model healthy relationships, of course. You want to have that open, you know, communication, that open dialogue that allows, you know, kids to feel safe. You know, you don't want to be a real authoritarian type parent where you're not really available. You want to just be a really good listener.
Well, and it sounds like you're saying, and find a happy medium. And so on the one hand, you need to establish structure, but on the other hand, if that fist gets to be too much of an iron fist, you're going to lose them anyway.
It's about boundaries, right? It's mm-hmm. about, you know, creating really healthy boundaries. That's, I think, what we're looking for. You know, you obviously are the parent, and obviously you have to be the one that parents the child, but at the same time, you really want to be available to your kids. You know, you don't want to be judgmental. You know, you don't want to be, and of course you need to be judgmental when they're walking into areas that are dangerous, but, you know, you want to do it in a way that they feel safe, you know, and look for those teachable moments. I mean, all these television shows that they're watching, you know, maybe sit down with them and during the commercial, you know, talk about morals and values and what do you think about the way that person was dressed
mm-hmm.
and just think about those two, you know, rushing into a sexual relationship so fast and would you do something like that? And, you know, look for those moments maybe at the dinner table, although, you know, the dinner table doesn't always exist anymore. But, you know, maybe in the car, you know, driving mm-hmm. them to their baseball practice or whatever. You know, just those little, you know, snippets of moments that you have.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and it sounds like, I mean, what you're saying is that if you're not going to be the role model, if you're not going to talk to them about those things, somebody else is.
Right, right. Well, isn't that really, you know, like sort of how gangs are created and
mm-hmm.
people start going to areas that are dangerous because nobody's there at home. I mean, they're feeling invisible. I mean, you know, I hate to keep going back to the divorce or single parent family, but unfortunately it does exist. And it can happen in a family that's, you know, a two parent family. But, you know, if there's a divorce going on, there's a lot of chaos. There may be a lot of emotional unavailability at home. You know, the child may really feel invisible and parents are really so preoccupied and, you know, how much child support they're getting or not getting that they're not really there for their kids, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what I'd like everybody out there to know is that don't feel embarrassed by that. Don't feel like, you know, because you're working two jobs and because you're doing all these things and things start to happen with your child, do not take this as a personal attack. You know, go out there, contact somebody, you know, get some help. I know that, and one of the things that I will tell some of the parents, when I can sense that they're embarrassed by the fact that they're having to talk to someone else about how to resolve a problem with their child, and it's, you know, it's to then explain to them when my children were younger was, you know, at this point your child understands your buttons, and they don't know mine. So you, as a stranger, probably is going to have a better chance of getting my child at that time at 7 or 8 years old, you know, to go to bed at 8 o'clock rather than ask for another drink of water, you know, another glass of milk, rub my back, read a book, whatever it might be. They have a better chance at getting them to do that because they don't know their buttons. So bringing in a professional to come in and work with you is going to help because the child doesn't know their buttons and they are going to at least be more attentive in listening to what it is they have to say. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you're saying is there's no shame here. I mean, there's no shame that, you know, you're going through a separation and you're just not as available and you're having your own, you know, bouts mm-hmm. of depression. I mean, that's what is so great about the community out there, being able to reach out and have somebody come in and intervene and say, look, you know, let me hold your hand through this. I mean, you know, the professional is going to know more about this issue than you are. Mm-hmm. And that's really when you want to reach out. And thank goodness there are people out there that are willing to help.
Right. And whatever it is that you do out there for a living, trust me, you know a lot more about that than we do about what it is we're doing. So,
right.
you know, whatever it is that your profession, that's what you're good at, and that's what we may need to get a hold of you to talk about. And if you're good at it and we're smart, we're going to listen to what it is you have to say. Same thing
and
goes
true. And you
have
to remember, I mean, during adolescence, I mean, they're supposed to be not wanting to really communicate with you. It is more of a struggle to get them to talk because they are, you know, going through that. That's a normal adolescent stage where they're, you know, looking to be autonomous and they're looking to become their own person and individuate and, you know, have their own voice. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right, Alan. Right. You know, maybe talking to somebody else will be more comfortable for them than talking to the so-called enemy, the parent.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's kind of what you are during that period, you know, even without an addiction problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I get a kick out of a lot of the parents that will start explaining to me, you know, what's going on and everything else. And I'll look at them and I'll go, I mean, do you remember what you were like at that age?
Right.
You know, we've got to be able to remember that because, I mean, if you think about it, you go, hey, you know, we did the same things. It's part of the handbook. So.
Right, exactly. I just think that there seems to be more of these enmeshed relationships that there weren't as many, at least when I was young. I mean, yes, you had a high school sweetheart, let's say, or you know, I'm probably dating myself here, but it just seems they're getting younger and younger, and they're having these relationships that look almost like they're not mm-hmm. even like adult relationships at all. I mean, they're just obsessive, possessive. They almost kind of look, well, they can be abusive relationships.
Oh yeah.
How
much of this would you say as far as how much it's escalating, how much would you say is coming from the immense commercialization that we have, especially in this country?
Commercialization of relationships,
of growing up. In other words, I mean, you know, with the, you know, on the Disney Channel, you know, on the Disney Channel, they're talking about, you know, relationships with between the 9 and 10 year olds, or, you know, the commercialization of what it is, you know, the songs that they're now introducing to the kids, you know, that are very suggestive at, you know, at 9 and 10 years old. So they're out there dancing to something that's saying, you know, get your groove on.
Right. No, I think pop culture certainly plays a part in it. But I think it really starts at home more so. I think if there's, you know, growing up and having open dialogue with your kids is the best medicine for being able to, you know what is right and what is wrong. I agree that pop culture definitely plays a part, but I think that the communication at home is really important.
I agree, and you're right. And you can turn the TV off, you know.
Exactly. I mean, there are things you can do if you're willing to do it. I mean, one of the things I see a lot with these kids is they say, well, you know, her mom lets her do this and her mom lets her do that, and I see so much freedom that these kids have where, you know, a lot of the parents don't know what parties their kids are going to. They don't know where their kids are. They're letting them out after curfew. They're not even realizing, you know, hey, like out here in this community, there's a curfew, I think, at 10 o'clock.
Yep.
My daughter is older now, so I don't know what the curfew is, but I believe it's 10 o'clock out here where I'm at. And they don't even, like, have any concern about that. Or they're driving in cars where kids have only had their license a month. And, you know, there's a law against that. You can't
yep.
drive in a car with a new licensee unless they've had their license at least, I think, 6 months or something. And the parents don't care. And they're saying, you know, look, my friend's allowed to do it. My friend's getting picked up by this person in their car. And you're sitting there as the parent that's trying to do the right thing with your hands up going, wow, I have a lot to compete against, not only the pop culture, but these other parents that are letting kids, you know, run the show.
Well, and you're right. And in some cases, the parents are letting them run the show, and they're not parenting their own children. And oftentimes, those are the ones that I see a little further down the road.
Right.
But also, you have the fact that they really aren't saying that, but that the other child is saying that, you know, just, you know, because the child doesn't.
Oh, that's true,
yeah,
too,
you know,
right.
The child doesn't want to say, oh, well, I can't go because, you know, I didn't do my homework and I blah, 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 you know, whatever it is that they, that the real reason is. Instead, it's just, oh, yeah, well, you know, my parents let me do this and my parents let me do that. And they want to lead the other kids to believe, well, then those kids go out and they tell their parents they get to do this. And really, all we're doing is spreading a lie.
They're being very manipulative, of course.
Yes.
And lying, and you're absolutely right. So you just have to be mindful, and you have to know your truth as a parent. You can't, you know, they aren't your friends. Your kids are your kids, you know. Parents, you know, and I hate to sound so judgmental, and I think I'm sounding kind of judgmental as I'm hearing myself talk, but I do get frustrated because in my line of work, it seems like it's often the parent that isn't able to take control of the situation, you know, and the kid's now, you know, out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be nice to see parents, you know their truth, know what they believe in, know what their boundaries are. And, you know, we're not going to cross that boundary in our home. It just doesn't really matter what, you know, your friends are doing. It's what we're going to do in this home. This is our home, you know.
Well, let me first tell you, I don't think it sounds judgmental at all. I mean, part of what you help teach families is to set up structure. And
yeah,
so
exactly.
For you to explain to them, this is what the structure is, if they're not in it and they feel that they're being judged, I think that's their problem. I mean, because you know, this is what you do for a living. You know, you help get them to the point they need to set up that structure in their family, you know, be it as a life coach and from a business standpoint or in dealing with the home. It's still helping to set up that structure. But you're right, because you also have people that will say when you're offering these things, well, you're being awfully judgmental. Well, no, I'm really not.
It's not easy. And because, I mean, you know, earlier I was talking about, you know, single parenting, this and that, but now let's look at the economy and all the pressure that's going on in homes today. Just a lot of financial fear, a lot of unemployment. It's a scary time, and when you're going through all that stuff, you may not be as available for your kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you have to really just be extra mindful, you know, during these times, these really hard times, to be aware that, you know, you got a family there. You have to keep that going on, even though you've got all these other issues outside of yourself that are happening. Otherwise, your kids they may stray.
Right. Now, would you say also that, I mean, this is a time, even more so of a time for them to communicate more with them? And how much of that do you think they should discuss with their kids when you're having difficulties? You know, from a financial standpoint, how much do you think they should share with their kids?
Well, I think kids know, you know, when suddenly, you know, there isn't the money there that used to be there, you know, they're not getting the material things that they used to get. I think they have an idea that there's something wrong. I mean, of course, you don't want to cause a lot of anxiety for your kids. You don't want them to live in, you know, fear that, oh my God, you know, dad's going to lose his job. But I just think a really healthy dialogue about, you know, what things cost and the way the world is, and that we have to all pitch in here, and we all have to be aware that things aren't maybe what they were a while ago, and it may be temporary, but, you know, let's be a family here. Let's work together. Nothing to be afraid of. Let's just, you know, come up with some new solutions. You know, and of course, that may not always work. Kids want what they want, and they want it now. And especially if they're addicts, you know, whether they're drug addicts, they're also going to be materialistic addicts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be easy because they're used to getting what they want, and now suddenly things have changed. But, you know, like I keep going back to knowing your truth as a parent and not being afraid of your kids. Not being afraid of your kids' reactions. You know, so what if they have a tantrum? You know, so what if they get upset? Okay, that they probably should be upset because they're not getting their way, right? Isn't that normal?
Yeah.
You know, just not being so afraid of kids' reactions, not trying to hold their hand so tightly and being their friend, you know, be a parent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. And what you're saying, I think, is from a communication standpoint, is a moderate level of communication, not to the point of frightening them, but, you know, but let them know what's going on in the economy. And I agree. And I think either extreme, you know, is damaging. And I'll
Right, you know, right, right.
you know.
Absolutely. You don't want to grow. I mean, there's nothing worse than growing up in a family with constant financial fear, because, you know, you take that into your adult life and suddenly you don't feel you deserve things, or you're always afraid, you know, to take chances and to move forward in your life. I mean, from a life coaching perspective, you know, if you grow up in a family where there are always financial issues, you know, you're going to always take that secure road, or the so-called secure road, and not take chances in your life. So, mm-hmm. of course, you don't want kids to be so frightened that when they're older they don't take chances and, mm-hmm. and do great things and wonderful things, because they're afraid that, oh, my God, they might, you know, end up without anything.
Okay, and then share with us what the downside is for the opposite. You know, the family that's incredibly wealthy that never discusses any of the financial things with the child, so that they know absolutely nothing about what it actually takes to make a living.
Well, I think we've all seen, you know, what the entitled child looks like. You know, that everything is coming to them. The ones that have those real fancy cars in high school and just really don't have any clue. They've never had to work. I mean, you know, I'll just personally say my daughter, who has a fabulous job. I mean, she started working at 15, and I think that was the greatest thing that ever happened, because once she graduated college, she had work experience and she had good work ethic, and she was responsible. These kids that have never worked or have never understood, you know, what it's like to sort of balance things out, and just everything's coming to them. It's a rude awakening when you graduate college and suddenly, you know, you've got to face the world and have no experience. I see a lot of those kids, too, those young adults that have no life skills. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see that a lot, of course, with kids that are getting clean and sober. I mean, they've been so busy using, or the ones that are in these relationships, they've been so busy and so, you know, anesthetized that suddenly they have to be out there responsible and carrying on a job and being on time, and they don't know what to do. They're just lost. So absolutely, if you are brought up in a wealthy family, that should have nothing to do with teaching your kids about, you know, financial responsibility. You know, maybe giving them a budget, maybe having, you know, giving them an allowance and them having to sort of, you know, navigate that allowance and not just give them money every time they ask. I think that's a really excellent way to go. Like, they get so much money a week and they have to use that for their gas or their spending money. Now, of course, if there's a drug problem, of course, you don't want cash flowing all over the place either. I mean, you just have to kind of look at each situation as they come.
Well, one of the ways that I'm able to kind of judge what's going on out there, you know, where the problems lie, is where there are more programs opening up. And one of the areas that's growing is the young adult programs. And it's the ones just exactly what you're talking about, the ones that weren't given any skills at all. So now they're coming out of high school or they're coming out of college. They have absolutely no skills. And there's actually now programs that they're going to that are very similar to the teen programs. They're having to teach them all of those skills that the parents either chose not to or just didn't make it a priority.
Right. I mean, I had a client that, you know, I see all the time. I mean, she mid-20s, getting out of a drug addiction, becoming sober, doesn't know how to write a check. You know, doesn't know how to clean up her room. Doesn't know how to organize herself. You mm-hmm. know.
Well, who did it for her? The maid.
More just being so numbed out for so many years, nothing got done, you know? I mean, just nothing got done. It was mm-hmm. just living this existence where there's no responsibility, you know, just everything's about when you're going to get your next drug, your next high, that you're not really taking care of business.
Mm-hmm.
And now suddenly the drugs are gone and you have to suddenly have a life, and it's really scary for them, you know? It's really hard.
Well, and you mentioned, obviously, this is a client. Why don't you share with us, give our listeners your website. So if you want to get a hold of Sherry, and again, not only to deal with your, maybe your family situation, but even as a life coach on the business side, you can reach her, and she'll give you now your website and your phone number.
Thank you. SGABATherapy.com, that's SGABATHERAPY.com, SGABATherapy.com. Be more than happy to talk to anybody that's, you know, dealing with an issue where their child is, might be struggling with some sort of addiction, and today we're specifically talking about love addiction, but I deal in all addictions.
Okay. Now, and also, if you need to reach the show, either because you have questions for Sherry, or you just want to reach the show, or you want another way to get a hold of her, the show is Answers for the Family. That's the numeral 4. So that's Answers, the numeral 4, thefamily.com. And you can send in your questions. And in fact, we have a blog now, so we're saving all of the shows. So you can go online, you can download the show. If you have to run, I want to hear the rest of this show. Okay, it's going to be there. You can download it. If you want to listen to it with your kids, you go, you know what? I'd love to have them hear some of these things from somebody else other than me, because me as the parent, for some reason, they shut off.
What a great opportunity, Alan. I have to really thank you for that. I mean, like you were talking about earlier, where sometimes talking to the professional might be more effective. I think when I was talking about those communication opportunities, this is a perfect idea, is to sit down with your kids and listen to a podcast where they can, you know, go, oh, wow, it's on the computer. Ooh, that's kind of cool. And I think it'll, maybe encourage them more to want to sit and listen to it because it is on the computer. I think that's an excellent idea.
Well, thank you. And I think that if they do, they get the whole family there. First, it's a family thing that they're all doing together. But also, I mean, you know, let's talk a little bit about some of the mistakes the parents made. Because now, if now you have the child that's listening, that says, oh, well, it's not all on me. You know, these aren't people out there that are just putting it all on me. These are people that are actually talking about maybe some of the same issues. So let's talk a little bit maybe about some of the mistakes that the parents make, some of the things they can do to correct that, looking at it more from a child standpoint.
Are you talking about love addiction per se right now?
Let's start with love addiction, but kind of, you know, just the parenting component of it. We as a parent, first with love addiction, and then maybe addictions as a whole.
Well, like I talked about earlier, I mean, there's not a whole lot you can, you know, do about going back to early developmental stages that might have not been met. I mean, but let's say you aren't going to have a baby. Let's start there. Maybe you're pregnant, you are listening to this show. You know, you want your children to have that really great attachment, that bonding, that ability to be able to connect to you and then go through those early developmental stages where, let's say you walk out of the room for a minute, but then you come back and you're there and you make your child feel, you know, your baby feel secure and safe. That's how they're going to be able to grow up and have relationships that are healthy and secure, because they have felt really secure with their original caretaker. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to go as far back as that's the best thing I can tell you.
No,
you're
really right.
Go through those early stages with complete, profound empathy and love and nurturing so that your child does feel safe and secure and doesn't feel abandoned. I mean, the ones that have problems later on are the ones where they did feel that early abandonment. And suddenly when they find somebody to latch on to, like I said earlier, that becomes mom, you know. Well, if I could just get this person to really, really be there for me and love me, then I'm going to get that early attachment need finally satisfied, you know. And, of course, nobody can do that. Nobody can give you what you didn't get early on. That would be impossible.
Right.
So that's where it starts.
No, you're right.
Early attachment.
Right. And this sort of falls within Maslow's theory.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's called the theory of actualization, and you know, you want the child to kind of move away from the instinctual drives and motives, and to sort of transcend, actualize into greater things, which means that they've mastered those early developmental needs with that parent, and now they can move on and sort of, you know, safely navigate the world. Mm-hmm. Because they have that early security met. If that makes any sense.
It really does. And I think from that standpoint, then taking it, you know, along, going into various levels of structure, you know, many times, and we'll find as we're going over the history of a child, is that, you know, when we're now dealing with these problems at 15, but we find out that there were problems at 3 and 4 and 5.
Like neglect or abuse.
Exactly.
You know, that's definitely going to damage them later on if they've been abused or if their parents haven't been available for them emotionally or physically. You know, that has an effect later on. It absolutely does. So, you want to definitely work on issues of course, you don't want to neglect your children, but neglect can come in different ways. I mean, just sort of not being there emotionally can have an effect. Okay. I mean, you really want to learn to be present for your kids at all ages. You want to be there, you know, as corny as it sounds, you know, one day at a time. I mean, you want to be there 1 minute at a time. You want to be there in the moment with your children. You don't want to be thinking about 20,000 other things when your kids, you know, want to talk to you. I mean, be there. Talk to them. Be present. Be available. That's what they need. Even if you've heard that story 80,000 times. you know, well, it's you know how it is when kids come home from school and they're so excited about, you know, their day. Of course, there's other kids that don't want to talk about anything. We know about those kids, too. But, mm-hmm. you know, be excited for them. You know, get in the moment with them. That will really help them create safety. That creates safety for them later on when they know how to be connected to someone. That's how intimacy develops, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, intimacy, I'm sure you've heard, means into me. So being in the moment with your kids helps them later have really healthy, intimate relationships with significant others and friends and coworkers and anybody else that is in their lives.
Okay, well, now here's something that I know that I think everybody, it would be great if you can answer this question. Okay, we have the parent that recognizes that they weren't there for them. Either they worked, you know, they were working two jobs and they just couldn't be there for them. They now have teenagers. They're running into problems. Now, if they all of a sudden just change, they go, okay, I'm now going to change. I'm going to be a much more attentive parent and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. Well, the teenagers look at them like they're crazy.
Like, where have you been all
yeah,
my life?
Right. So, and in many cases, they don't accept it. Now, what would you recommend to the parents is, you know, how can they make that step? And is it something to where they're saying to their child, let me first apologize for what I didn't do up to this point? Or do they need to smooth into it? I mean, what would you recommend?
Yeah, that's a great question. It kind of reminds me of when the addict suddenly becomes sober. And now, you know, the other partner is like, I kind of liked it better when you weren't sober,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of thing. Or when the parent maybe was an addict and then suddenly is not anymore and is still a recovering addict and suddenly present and available, the children are like, I liked it when I could just like run the show. You have to, you know, the parent has to, I know it sounds very vague, I suppose, but know your truth. Know what now your new, create your new boundaries for your new home. It is never too late. Yeah, you're going to get a lot of resistance, and your kids are going to be, like, really angry. And you know what? They have a right to be angry. You weren't around for them. So allow them to be angry. You know, the greatest thing is to be comfortable in their discomfort. So they're uncomfortable. Okay. That's okay. Allow them to be uncomfortable. Doesn't mean you're going to now suddenly lay back and not be available again, once again. No, you're going to be available. You're going to pick up the pieces, and you're going to have open communication with them, and you're going to go, look, yeah, I'm sorry I wasn't there before. Okay, so now these are the new rules, and this is how it's going to be navigated. Now, again, you know, this isn't going to be easy, and that's when maybe professional help really can't help,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they just may not have any respect for you at this point. You know, you haven't really been around for them, and they really aren't going to be all that interested in what you have to say, because where were you, you know, where were you when they needed you? So I think family therapy can definitely be in order, you know, during cases like that. But you have to deal with the resistance, not go into denial over it. You know, not deny it, but just go, yeah, I expect the worst here because I wasn't there. And you know what? Eventually, you know, everything's temporary, and things will smooth out again, once again. I mean, I think that I became a much more available parent probably later on. And, yeah, it was hard at first, but, you know, they want you. They want their parents. They want you to be there. It's just they have a funny way of showing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a story that kind of drives that point home. I was talking with he's the president of a Fortune 500 company, and his son had run away. And I got to their house that was huge. And he started ranting. And as he's ranting, and he says, you're supposed to be the professional. You tell me. He goes, what the hell is going on with this kid? He's 15 years old, and I've given him everything, and I cannot believe that he has done this. And he's just ranting and raving and stuff. And finally, as he calmed down, and I said, sir, how many vice presidents do you have that work for you? He says, what the hell does that have to do with anything? We're talking about my son. I said, you want to answer the question? He says, I don't know. I've got 17. He says, what are you doing? Like this. And I said, if you have 17 vice presidents and they've been with you for, say, 15 years, And all of a sudden, you walked in and said, I realize that I allowed you guys to do everything your way, and I gave you a lot of anonymity, and you made a lot of decisions, and all of a sudden, I'm changing that, and we're now going to do it exactly this way, and I'm changing everything.
Right.
How many of them would...
a lot of resistance.
Yeah, I said, how many of them would stay with you? He goes, I don't know. He says, half of them would probably quit. And I go, like, leave? As in, run away? Your
right.
son has run away, but you've just told me that you've given him everything for 15 years, and now all of a sudden, over the last couple of months, you've decided to set boundaries. You established this for 15 years, and you think in 2 months it's going to all of a sudden just turn around?
Right.
You know,
exactly.
So, yeah, you know, it's, you know, for all of you out there, it's, you know, as Sherry's saying, it's not going to be easy. You know, it's not something you just snap your fingers and it's going to happen. That's why there's people out there that can help, because it's going to take some time, and you're going to have somebody else there that's going to be able to reinforce this.
I mean, I do have some tips here. I mean, first,
please.
You know, like we talked about earlier, really being open with your kids, talking about values and beliefs related to sexuality and healthy relationships. Talk to them during those teachable moments. You know, set boundaries so they start to feel secure, role model, you know, healthy behavior. Let's see, you can even role play as parents what you think is healthy, a healthy relationship or healthy boundaries or whatnot. You know, maybe, you know, pick up books, videos, pamphlets on the subject. I even have some books that I can recommend for you.
Oh, that'd be great.
You know, really know your child's friends. If they're invited to a party, you know if there's going to be supervision there. You know, don't minimize what you suspect to be true. Don't go into denial. You know, often we are the enablers, and we don't want to do that. We really want to, like, you know, deal with this thing head on. You know, realize teens will deny or shift the blame. They're going to come up with all kinds of excuses, and they're going to manipulate. But again, you know, getting back to knowing what you know to be the truth. You know, like I said earlier that we discussed, regulate the internet activity. They even have special software you can use on the computer to know what's going on and who their friends are. And like you have, you know, emphasized on numerous occasions this hour, you know, seek professional help. You know, so you want to start out by being aware of the situation, you know, recognize is the teen in this type of relationship or in some sort of love-addicted circumstance. How bad is the problem? You know, make a conscious decision, a mindful decision, we're going to change this. You know, really do some self-care, even for yourself as a parent. You're going to be a much more available, mindful, present parent if you're taking care of yourself. Move out of denial, like we said. Let's see. And really, you know, try to help your kids and understand that all the pain that everyone's going through is really a growing experience. Lessons are going to be learned here. Transformation is going to take place. And that's positive. And, you know, like we always say in the 12-step program, trust in yourself, in your family, you know, learn to let go and look for, you know, outside sources to help you. There's also Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. I don't really think that they necessarily allow teenagers to go in there by themselves, but you might want to check out some meetings. There's the Sex and Love Recovery Institute. They might have some resources for you. There's some books I can recommend. One is called The Teen Whisper,
mm-hmm.
How to Break Through the Silence and Secrecy of the Teenage Life, and that's by Mike Linderman, Linderman. That's called The Teen Whisper. This is another great book called Love or Addiction, The Power and Peril of Teen Sex and Romance. I highly recommend that book, and that's by Brenda Schaefer, S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R. That's Love or Addiction, The Power and Peril of Teen Sex and Romance. And then finally, Adolescent Sex and Love Addiction by Eric Griffin Shelley. And it kind of outlines case histories of different, you know, sex and love relationships.
Okay. Now these are all books that would be good for the parents or for the professionals
yes.
out there to get. What about the teens? Now, let's say that some of them have gone and downloaded this and they're now listening to it with their child. What would be something that you could, you know, say, look, why don't you be proactive, the teen themselves? What would be a book that would be good for them?
I found a book called Love, Dating, and Sex, What Teens Want to Know by George Eager, E-A-G-E-R, Love, Dating, and Sex, What Teens Want to Know. And it just discusses different sensitive issues such as love, sex, and romantic relationships for teens. Then there's some websites, loveaddiction.com, Then there's the sex, love, and, well, let me just spell this one out. It's kind of a long one. SLAALosAngeles.org. That's SLAA Los Angeles spelled out .org.
Okay.
And then the phone number for Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous is 323-957-4881. 323-957-4881.
Okay, and while we're giving these things out, can you give out yours again?
Oh, sure. My email, if you'd like to write me, is sherry@sgabatherapy.com. That's S-H-E-R-R-Y at S-G-A-B-A-therapy.com. And my website is sgabatherapy.com, S-G-A-B-A-therapy.com.
Okay, and then again, in regards to the show, is Answers for the Family. That's answers, the numeral for, thefamily.com. I'm Alan Cardozo. I bring you this through West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations. We want you to know that there are people out there that can help. Sherry, we have got, I can't believe this has gone by so quick.
I can't either. Has this been 50 minutes?
Well, and I just looked over. We have like 3 minutes.
I am like shocked. When we started, I'm like, oh my God, I don't know how this is going to happen without commercials, you know? And it really did go fast.
Well, yeah, in fact, I've been trying to get a little better at this. So I thought, okay, when I get about a third of the way through, I want to kind of, you know, stop and give sort of a little, you know, bit about who we are, who you are, and about a third, and then again about two thirds of the way. So I thought we were about two thirds of the way, and I glanced over and I went, wow, we've got now 2.5 minutes.
Wow.
Is there anything else that you would like, any particular types of treatment or anything that you would like to tell our listeners in the next 2 minutes?
Well, I just first want to thank you, Alan, for having me as a guest. Like I said earlier, I think what you are doing is so amazing, and how wonderful that people have a place to go for help when they're in so much trouble with their children and they can't get their children moving. I mean, wow. And I'm glad that this topic was able to be shared today. It's kind of a sensitive subject, and I don't think a lot of parents realize just how embedded their kids are in these relationships and how dangerous they can become. I had a client also that came from a psych hospital a while back that same thing, you know, had this intense relationship. The guy broke up with her, and she ended up having to be placed in a hospital setting to be safe because it was so devastating. This is very real. Not to scare anybody, but you know, if your children are showing unhealthy signs or showing signs of being in a really unhealthy situation, you really need to be aware of it and not think it's, oh, how cute, you know, look, my daughter has a little boyfriend or my boyfriend has a little girlfriend. What's really going on here? Are they alienating the rest of their life? Are their grades going down? I mean, I didn't even talk about that, but you know, are their grades going down? Like you said earlier, are they alienating their other friends? Are they suddenly deciding, oh, I don't want to become a cheerleader? Oh, I don't think I want to go to college? Or one thing I hear a lot of, and it's really, it's just unbelievable, these kids that change their college choices because they want to be with the other person.
Oh,
I don't know.
Wow.
I think that's pretty crazy, right? I mean, you have all these plans for your future and now suddenly you're going to go to a whole new college because you want to follow somebody. I don't know. Who am I to say, but it just seems a little extreme.
Right. For someone that may very well not even be with you through the first semester. I'll tell you what.
Exactly. Probably not, you know, if we all know what the first year of college is like living in a dorm. There's just things you really got to be watchful. And again, okay. Just get out of that denial mode. Get out of that enabling mode. Really look at things for what they are. You know, we tend to sometimes want them to be what we want them to be, and they're not that.
All right. Well, I want to finish this with one thing. I have loved this. I want a commitment from you that I can have you come back, that you'll come back on the show, and maybe we'll go into more of the life coaching.
Oh, absolutely.
How's that?
It'd be my pleasure. Anything I can do to support this station and you, Alan, I am all for it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And with that, I think we are gone.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And listen next week for our next special guest. Good day.
Okay.
Bye now.
Thank you, Alan.
You're
Bye-bye.
Welcome. Bye.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.